Well, hey there, freaks. It's your boy Marty here. Brief prelude to this episode. Had to cut out about 15 minutes. Matt and I tried to explain the history of the user-activated soft fork on the fly after getting a user contribution question. And after 15 minutes of discussion, trying to put this together off the top of our heads, we realized how confused we were on the timeline and just had to cut everything. So we are going to organize our thoughts, get a timeline together with pen and paper so that we can give you the true history of the user-activated soft fork. So the contributor out there who paid for a contributor this week, just know we are working on it. But again, we couldn't do it on the fly. It's a very dense subject with a lot of nuance and a lot of different BIP numbers that you have to remember. So we are going to try and do that subject justice by getting our thoughts organized. So I hope you enjoy the 45 minutes episode today. Sorry, it's a little bit short, but we just felt the content that we talked about for 15 minutes was too confusing, and it's better to get our thoughts in order. So enjoy.
I'm good to go.
You sure you're good to go, Matthew?
Yeah, I'm trying to be a little reformed today.
Trying to dry out?
Nice and responsible.
Yeah, me too. What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. Welcome back to Rabbit Hole Recap, specifically, Matt. Matt's coming back from a trip, a little hungover right now. How are you?
Happy to be here, as usual.
Sorry to throw you under the bus like that.
A little bit slow right now, but I'm going to work through it.
We got a lot to talk about today, Matt. There's going to be many aspects to this episode of Rabbit Hole Recap. We've got a special request from the freaks out there via contribution, and we feel obliged to attack the task at hand. It is a bit of an arduous task, but we'll do our best to accomplish it. Mind you, we are doing this in haste because we just saw the contribution 10 minutes ago. We're trying to throw this together.
Are we going to like do the ad reads or anything?
Yeah, we're going to do the ad reads first. I'm just prepping people mentally for explanation. We'll get to that. But before we get into it, we've got to give a shout out to our sponsors. You freaks know all about them, the Cash App. Use the Cash App this morning to buy a spot at our cold card demonstration on September 26th here in New York City. The cold card demonstration used BTC Pay Server to produce an invoice, and that invoice produced a BEC32 address, and I sent from my Cash App to the BEC32 address pretty seamlessly.
That's great. I was able to designate
my spot. So shout out to Cash App. BEC32 addresses, sending two BEC32 addresses is enabled. On top of that, you're able to buy, sell, withdraw Bitcoin. Obviously, withdraw Bitcoin. You can send Bitcoin to the app as well. And they got that incredible boost program. I actually used a coffee boost less than 30 minutes ago. I'm looking at my iced coffee now. I saved $1 at Blue Bottle Coffee using my local coffee shop boost. So go to your local app store, whether it's Google Play, Apple App Store, use the code STACKINGSATS. You'll get $5, and $5 will go to Owls Lacrosse, which is a charity very near and dear to our hearts, and download the Cash App today. And then shout out to Unchained Capital. We will be seeing those guys next week in Dallas when we head down there for the BitBlock Boom conference, and Unchained's actually doing a joint event the Friday before that BitBlock Boom conference in Dallas with Adamant Capital, with Tortemeester and that team. If you freaks don't know about Unchained yet, they are helping us out with their vault program. They've got a 2 or 3 multi-sig set up, and you can even get more exotic with it if you feel the need to. And basically what will happen is you'll keep 2 or 3 keys on a Trezor or Ledger, and then Unchained is there to be the second key of that 2 or 3 multi-sig if you ever need them. Otherwise, you have full custody of your funds. And on top of that, they have on the other side Bitcoin collateralized loans. So if you earn a crunch, you don't want to sell Bitcoin, you want to get some USD, you can use unchained-capital.com and get a USD Bitcoin collateralized loan. Friends don't let friends sell Bitcoin. Again, that's www.unchained-capital.com.
And if you still haven't bought your BitBlock Boom ticket, our promo code is RHR.
It is RHR. It's coming up quick. Flights to Dallas. Still pretty cheap. Not that bad. I booked my flight yesterday.
You're cheap as hell.
Yeah. We got a big list today. Before we get to the list, we were alluding to it earlier.
Wait, the block height is...
Oh, yes, we got to stay on
the
this.
The block height is 589,218.
589,218?
Yeah, correct.
So we are 30,218?
What was that?
Did you say 589,218?
Yeah.
5'8", so we're 30,000... 782 blocks away from the next halving. Quick math from your boy Marty. I think that's right too. Hope it is. And we're looking at the trade block XBX index, price of Bitcoin.
Wait, what'd you say? It's like 40,000, right? Blocks.
I said 30,000.
Yeah, it's 41,000 blocks until the next.
Wait,
the
you
next
said.
Halving.
Oh, it's 630,000. I got mixed up there.
Yeah.
I thought. The block height at 620,000. You're right. So my math was wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
It wasn't my math. It was my designation of the next block.
I'm not
having.
Very sharp here anyway. So.
Yeah, 600 blocked 630,000, not 620,000. Damn it, Marty. And the trade block XBX index right now is $11,566.35. We've been slacking on giving that information, and we feel the need to get back in order here on Rabbit Hole Recap.
Yeah, we couldn't forget it again. I had to make sure we didn't forget it.
All right, so on to the contribution, the request. Slow it down for the plebs of request. User act. But SegWit, staying on that perfect segue, with SegWit, it enables what I wrote about in the Bend today, which was Brian Bishop's proposal for Bitcoin vaults. Which basically would allow you to construct a transaction in a certain way that sort of delays the sending of that transaction for N blocks and allows you to create another transaction that moves those UTXOs to another wallet to quote-unquote safety, just in case the initiation of the first transaction was fraudulent or you sent it to the wrong address or something. So it's basically like an undo button for transactions that I believe was like, would be a huge upgrade UX-wise.
Or almost like a watchtower. Right?
Yes, basically. Yeah. It's very similar to a watchtower.
So like if someone's trying to steal your Bitcoin, you can revert it to a different wallet.
Yes. Yeah, so it's really cool. Your boy, Eamon, is actually the first, was part of the team.
Not our boy.
He's your boy, dude.
Not our boy.
So this is something, these vaults, the concept of quote-unquote covenants has been around since 2016. Got to give credit where credit is due. I believe Eamon did write the paper.
Hey, he was one of them, yes.
And one of the people that wrote the paper.
Indeed.
Describing this.
But his required a hard fork.
Yes, it did. Brian's proposal doesn't require a hard or soft fork, actually. You don't need any upgrade like that. You just need to do a bit of refactoring, I believe. But... yeah, so this is a concept that's been around for a while, but Brian finally, and a couple others, I believe, put their minds together and put a proposal out for it to try and make it possible.
I mean, my quick, like, uneducated question would be, aren't you kind of just pushing the security onto wherever that wallet is?
That's
now?
I was
like,
actually,
what are you solving?
Walking back from getting my coffee. Yeah. Well, that's the question I have. Like, do you have to a predetermined address that you send it to?
How do I protect that address? Do I have a watchtower protecting?
Yeah.
Like, what is
well,
that?
I'll be speaking with Brian next Friday. We can
oh,
ask
I'm
him
excited.
That.
That's another thing. We should touch on what the difference between a hard fork and a soft fork is.
Yes.
Like that's a pretty big one that we just didn't talk about in the user activated.
It's true.
So, like, a hard fork is consensus-breaking change. Like, everyone needs to upgrade. Otherwise, you're on two different... you have two different chains. But with a soft fork, it's, like, all the old clients still can...
It's backwards
connect.
Compatible. Yeah. So, soft fork, users can upgrade to the software that is soft fork compatible, run it, and users can also stay on old software versions or old versions of Bitcoin... and still be interacting with nodes that are on the new software and be backwards compatible.
Right. And if you have, as we, If you remember, like the most that more recent bug we had, the inflation bug, that was caught and fixed, that was only possible in the newer clients. It yes. wasn't possible in the older clients. So that's the kind of that's one of the main negatives, is if you do these hard forks, you don't have the older clients.
You don't have the immunity,
like,
of the old. Yeah. So I believe that was like any version before 16.5 was okay from that one.
Right. So if you were running an old client, you would immediately see that it was an invalid block. But if we had hard forked, then none of those clients would have been able to do that.
This is why we think of the man of the coma here on Rabbit Hole Recap. You think of the man of the coma and you saw a fork because of him. And you never know, that man in the coma running an old client version may fucking save your life for the future by recognizing invalid blocks.
I mean, he's not going to see the invalid block if he's in a fucking coma. So
this is true.
He has to like wake up from the coma and be like, ooh, invalid block.
We'll work on that hypothetical. But think of the man in the coma. He's important. There's a lot. You want him to be able to wake up and use his money. So check out. We'll put the link to the GitHub proposal for the vault. Do you want to? You take this one over. So this is your bread and butter trade-offs. Bitcoin SV last week. BitMEX research pointed out that they attempted to, or they didn't attempt to. They mine the network mined the block with a 210 megabyte block, and it caused a lot of nodes to fall off the network.
Like all of them went down, right? Like a bunch of them went down.
That's the thing. Like people were calling out BitMEX, like your hardware is not up to clap. Like if you want to be running BSV, you have to be running this hardware. Like it's your fault. And like the tweet where they pointed it out was them being like us, and to make sure that we weren't just like running inefficient hardware, we checked four other services and screenshotted that their block
like
explorers
the block
were
explorers
down.
And everything, yeah.
And like five or six block explorers, which you would think are investing in pretty hefty hardware, weren't able to.
And we just talked about this other guy, Ryan Charles,
yes,
last week, who basically like right before this block happened was the one complaining, saying like my node costs are going through the roof. I like can't afford this. Like it's not charity. And yeah, that's exactly what we said. Like node costs go up. People that run nodes don't get paid to run it, so it's an indirect benefit. So you have less nodes, and then if you have flexible block sizes like this, where the blocks aren't always full, but they have really high, you know, non-existent caps, basically, then anyone running a node needs to be able to handle. It's like such an attack vector. They need to be able to handle like the rogue 210 megabyte block, right? Like, because think about it, like you're thinking about your resources, and like usually it's only using 2 megabytes or something like that, and then all of a sudden anyone can just send a 200 megabyte or just bullshit data. You can send whatever you want, weather data or whatever.
Well, the weather data is important. We need it on a blockchain. What would we do without it?
It's not even a secure blockchain.
Trade-offs, freaks.
Oh yeah, your tweet was great. What was your tweet? If you ignore trade-offs, they're going to come back and kick you in the dick.
Yeah. That's what will happen. You'll get kicked in the dick. Protect your dicks. Think about the trade-offs. And your vaginas. You should protect your vaginas, too, if you're listening out there with one. We're pretty heavy macro from here on out. It's been a crazy, crazy week in the traditional financial world. I guess we should start with like the Chinese yuan, U.S. dollar peg breaking pretty heavily. And there's a lot of... So there's been a lot going on. There's a lot of nuance to all of this and misunderstandings, I would say, in the mainstream and even in the presidency. So Trump came out on Monday, I believe, and basically called China out for manipulating their currency. So let's jump into the mechanics of what's going on.
He's been saying that for a while, but now he made it official, right?
Like the Treasury charged them with being money manipulators. But the way, so basically what happened, the reason the Chinese yuan broke its peg with the dollar and sort of went above 7 yuan per dollar over the week is because if you're really looking at it, they're not really manipulating their currency. They actually stopped manipulating the currency, stopped using U.S. dollars to buy the Chinese yuan, which was keeping the peg, holding the peg. And so that's basically how China, the People's Bank of China, has been holding the peg with the U.S. dollars.
They were propping it up, right?
They're propping it up with dollars that they have on their balance sheet. And Kyle Bass actually went on CNBC earlier this week and had a great interview. I'll share that YouTube link in the show notes. But he basically went on to describe, and I can't prove whether this is true or not, but this is just one view of what's going on. And he basically alluded to it may be something similar to what happened to South Korea in the 90s Asian currency crisis, where within Asia, they had the largest amount of U.S. dollars on their balance sheet at the time, like right before the crisis. But what we came to find was they were keeping those dollars on their balance sheet as they were lending it out to South Korean banks, who were then lending it out throughout the economy. And when push came to shove in the 90s currency crisis, South Korea basically had a liquidity crunch, and they, even though they were keeping those dollars on their balance sheet, they loaned them all out and didn't have access
to money to go around.
Yeah, so they didn't have access to buy their currency with dollars because they loaned it all out. Kyle Bass is saying something similar is happening to China right now, where they've done something maybe not exactly the same but similar, and that is why the peg is broken, is because they don't have enough dollar liquidity to hold the peg. So it actually brings up this weird, not weird, but it's interesting philosophical debate. Like, what is money manipulation? Like, is using the dollar to prop up the yuan manipulation? To me, that would seem yes.
We're saying it's not, right?
Yeah.
The U.S. government's saying it's not.
Well, the Trump, that's like the thing. Like, what, you get into the slippery slope, but what is manipulation? What is your definition of manipulation, and how?
Isn't it all manipulation and all,
yeah, that's what I would argue. I would argue it's all manipulation. It's just who's manipulating it in the most fashionable way at any given point in time.
I mean, in a truly free market, there's no such thing as manipulation, right?
Right.
Because one man's manipulation is like another man. Like, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah. But, so, there's rumors out there now. This China situation could be pretty big. And if it is, there's a lot of money, quote unquote, floating around in China, at least a lot of money on balance sheets in China. And there's rumors even that this is completely conjecture up to this point. I cannot prove this, but there's some very reputable people saying that it might be true, is that the CEO of HSBC was recently fired because it was found that he had lended something like $400 billion to the PBOC, like to try to help them in their efforts to prop up the system.
So, see, they seem to be implying there that that's currency manipulation, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what, do we know if they're hitting them for the propping or the not propping?
I don't know. Like, it's all confused. I think, I don't know. I'm not sure.
And what does that mean? It just means like the trade war is escalating anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's like this is,
you have Trump coming out today and basically begging the Fed to lower rates because we're getting crushed. He does not want a strong dollar. He came out and said today, like, believe it or not, I do not want a strong dollar. It hurts our great exporters like Caterpillar and all that.
He tweeted it.
Yeah, he tweeted it.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, and that's the crazy thing about this week in my mind. I wrote about on Monday is like, again, like the slippery slope of starting to like, what is manipulation? Like, if you're in a currency war, you do not say that you're in a currency war. You posture, you maneuver based off your enemy's moves, and you basically just, you're playing this game, but you're never letting everybody know that you're playing this game. And it feels like this week the whole world knows that they're playing this game now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you start having people question what is money, like, the fiat proponents are going to have a hard time. Like, once you start actually thinking about it, it just doesn't really make any sense. So this all started because the Fed lowered rates for the first time since 2009, right, or whatever?
Well,
but they didn't lower them as much as the market had expected, right? Would you say?
I don't think that causality, like that line of cause and effect, is exact. But it's all playing, like it's all
right. They're playing off each other.
They're all variables in a shit soup, if you will.
Because when did that happen? Was that like a week ago when they lowered it 25 basis points?
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago, I believe.
And then everything's just.
Yeah, it's, well,
like, the market's been going down since then, right?
Yeah, so you have something like every duration of bond in Germany, I believe, is negative right now. So any duration of bond that you bought, at least at one point, I believe.
All the way to like 30 years.
All the way to 30 years was you're expected to you're guaranteeing a loss, basically. Their economy is not expected to grow over every duration, which is scary to see.
And we had to be close to that with us, right, or something?
We're...
like we get a paltry.
Our 1 year is at like 127 right now.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. But
so stocks are down, oil's down, Bitcoin's up. Right?
Bitcoin is up. Bitcoin does seem to be playing. Bonds. Gold is up. Silver's up.
But not as much as Bitcoin.
Not as much as Bitcoin. Bitcoin's down, though, today.
And we're seeing Bitcoin as a safe haven.
We may be.
Everywhere.
It's uncorrelated. We can say it's uncorrelated, at least. I think that's a safer vernacular for now, even though I'm one of the biggest proponents. Bitcoin, in my mind, is a perfect safe haven. It has the properties through which you can save your haven of wealth. But
find safety in sats.
Find safety in sats. I like that. God damn it, Matt. You're too good at this.
Sats are my safe haven.
They are my safe haven. Sats are my safe haven. Pump it.
There you go. It's been pretty crazy to see that narrative play out, and you can really see how it can become very much a self-fulfilling prophecy if we like get a couple weeks here where just like shit's hitting the fan and the money that be decides that they want to take advantage of the fact that Bitcoin's pretty illiquid. It could just hasten the ultimate, because I mean I think Bitcoin is naturally the ultimate safe haven asset, right?
Yes.
It's hard to seize, it's easy to move, easy to secure.
And that's been the big debate around crypto, Twitter and Telegram, Bitcoin, Twitter and Telegram. At least in my observation last week is China driving this rally? You wouldn't be able to tell via the exchange volumes, but I don't know if we can look at exchange volumes in China. Like from what I understand, like a lot of it's done OTC via WeChat and stuff like that. So you have like probably dark markets in China, maybe bigger than the regulated markets.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Like the miners, especially, use a lot of OTC relationships and stuff. But it doesn't really matter. Like if it's who's buying it, right?
Yeah,
it could be Westerners buying it because they think Chinese should buy it or will buy it. Or it could be both, which is probably both.
Yeah. We just know that it's going up. Orange coin good, number go up.
But I mean, these kind of situations really highlight, you know, they make people think like if I've had plenty of people throughout the years say to me, Matt, like, that's great. Like Bitcoin is like a non-government currency that's independent of any governments. But why would I need that, right? Like government's fine running my money. And then when you have this kind of situation, both in, you know, Hong Kong and like the global macro, like all this trade war stuff between China and the United States.
Well, beyond China, like we just completely embargoed Venezuela, I believe. India and Pakistan, I believe, are starting to get into it. Shit is like heating up this summer. Sorry for interrupting.
No, yeah. So I think these are like, it's clear learning experiences, right? For everyone who's watching on the sidelines.
Yeah. And that's another interesting thing. This is like also Bitcoin's true. If we are turning into a recession here, or in the midst of a recession that we'll only know in retrospect, this will be the first time in Bitcoin's life cycle that it's experienced a market cycle like this. It was born in the depths of the last crazy recession.
Yeah, so what happens? Do we... I mean, who the fuck sells their Bitcoin in a market collapse? Do people really do that? Are people like going to rush to the exits like all the Bitcoiners are going to be like, oh my God, we got to sell.
Not the Bitcoiners I know.
Right?
Yeah.
All it needs to do is spike like a little bit and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, like, so that's the weird thing that's happening right now. It's like the dollar strengthening. That's what like Trump's freaking out because the dollar strengthening against all these currency crosses and So basically what you're seeing is like all the weaker currencies die as people seek flight in the dollar. And that's the overarching question I have in my mind, especially if China and Russia get screwed over in this macro situation. Do they have the balls to give the finger and say, we're not going to find safety in dollars. We're going to seek for gold. We're going to seek gold or Bitcoin.
Find safety in sats.
Sats are my safe haven, baby. Sats are my safe haven. It's true. Now, I mean, and again, empirically, there was actually, I've retweeted a infographic that was going around Bloomberg terminals today, like lining up Bitcoin versus gold. I believe the chart was called Smackdown for store value. And you just look at the properties that Bitcoin has when compared to the best store value the world had ever known up till 2009. It beats it out in a lot of core features. And then the features that it doesn't beat it out on it just so happen to be like time.
Yeah, they had like a segment where they were like, age, 10 years, X. Yeah, I mean, I think, right? Bitcoin as a store of value used to be like crazy fringe talk, and now it's
on CNBC every day.
Yeah, it's, you know, at least there's a debate around it. So people don't, you know, you're not so crazy if you take at least some percentage in Bitcoin. You're almost more crazy not to have an allocation to Bitcoin now.
Yeah, I would argue
it's like at least a small one.
Yeah, there were like, yeah. Again, it's riskier not to have skin in the game at this point. Binary people, it's still very early in the potential upward value accruation of Bitcoin. I don't know if that was just a sentence or not.
It could be. It's definitely early.
This is a good good segue into the next topic. Are the halvings priced in, Matt?
It's all priced in, Marty. Everything's priced in. I like have sympathy for the efficient market hypothesis, which is that like all known information is priced into the price of any, like if you have a truly free market, like that should be the end result. Like if someone knows, you know, apple crops are going to do poorly next year, like the prices of apples, it should be priced in, prices of apple farms and shit. At the same time, most industrial miners are selling all of their Bitcoin or most of their Bitcoin on a regular basis to cover their real life expenses, which are usually pretty tight margin. And that supply of that amount of Bitcoin is going to halve. The question becomes, I mean, that's a supply shock, but I don't think we've ever seen in any other situation seen a supply shock that was like known ahead of time, right? Like that's a pretty crazy combination. So it's like it is known, but, you know, the market attempts to price it in, but I don't think is very effective at doing it.
See, I hate the focus on halvings too, right? Because my point is nothing's priced in. Like, again, this is binary. This is either we're zero.
We're so far off from being priced effectively that, like, what the fuck are you even talking about?
That it's, like, laughable to even assume that halvings are priced in. People aren't even aware of Bitcoin, let alone halvings. And that's actually the interesting concept. Like, by the time people find out or become cognizant of what halvings are and, like, the actual impact they had on the supply schedule, like it's probably like 5 to 10 years from now, and there'll be almost like one Bitcoin mine per day.
But the efficient market hypothesis would state that you don't need everyone to know about it. You just, if you have a handful of people that know that it's incorrectly priced and what the proper price is, then they will price it in. They'll price in the future users or whatever. But I think on the contrary is that as Bitcoin price goes up, that amount of like daily flow we need to match the miners' sell pressure increases, right? And we're still pretty low on the adoption curve. So like, as long as that daily flow can't be quenched, it's not even a matter of even getting to, like, there's not enough capital to effectively price in the scale of what future all, especially since the proponents that say that this halving are priced in say that all future halvings are priced in.
Exactly. And the
humans aren't that.
The privilege that these efficient market hypothesis people are putting out there, assuming that the richest people in the world will also have the most foresight to invest in Bitcoin. It's very hubristic in my mind, you know? Like, you could just have it where, yeah, the people who recognize that this is mispriced actually don't have the capital to get it to the price where it should be.
Yeah, I mean, it should be...
Sorry, Bitcoiners don't have $100 trillion laying around.
Everything should get more priced in appropriately, right? As, like, liquidity increases, as, like, volume increases and stuff.
Yeah.
You need more demand. Demand side.
Yeah. So I guess that's... For me, as somebody who... If I'm putting on my investor cap looking at Bitcoin, I have a vision of where I think total addressable market is and where it will be at some point. I think I put 2030 in my head. And if it's not at that point, at 2030, it's either mispriced or not.
What point do you want it to be at 2030?
I think like 5 mil by 2030 makes sense.
The price for Bitcoin?
Yeah.
So what is that? That is that you've passed Sensat parity, right?
Yeah.
Sensat parity is $1 million a coin.
That might be a little too soon.
That
actually
seems pretty aggressive. And if it doesn't hit aggressive, that, then Bitcoin has failed. Okay, Marty. I just forgot what I was gonna say.
I think I'm gonna cut that out because that was too fucking stupid.
What, $5 million?
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
I meant to say 2040.
2040, $5 yeah, million dollars is yeah, less stupid? Okay. Either way, I'm happy. I would be happy with SAT percent. I'd be happy with $1 million of a coin. I think Bitcoin is being just fine enough. I just feel like the halvings being priced in, like, just this, we've been having this conversation about the halvings priced in since I got into Bitcoin, right? Everyone always... And the price keeps going up and the halvings keep happening. So, like, if you want to say, like, oh, that's not the halving price action, that's a different price action, like adoption, like you want to split it up or whatever, fine. But it's, like, all interconnected. And it's, like, we're arguing about things being priced in. And I watched it go from 6,000 to 3,000 to 13,000 to 10,000, and we're still talking about the halvings being priced in. Nothing, like, they can't even, we can't even price in, like, day-to-day action, but we're, like, pricing in, like, 6 months in the future or whatever.
Yeah.
And all the halvings after that.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's a tedious tedious conversation to have at this point. It's just stupid to think that anything's priced in right now, I would say. Not enough people know. That's all I'm going to say about that.
That's all, except for everything we just said.
Except for that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think number go up, so. And halvings continue.
Are you sympathetic for the people who got hacked, got their KYC AML information hacked on Binance?
Shit, dude, that's fucked up.
So
it's alleged, right? Binance is saying that it might not be true, but it might be, and CoinDesk is saying it's definitely true.
Yeah, so let's break down what we know so far. Apparently, there has been an information leak at Binance or a third party that they've engaged with that was doing KYC AML on their customers for them. And basically, hackers, I've seen videos of hackers going through pictures, like, of people sharing their passports.
Selfie,
yeah,
email address, phone number.
Yeah, pictures of people holding up their passports. Pretty creepy. And so, yeah, apparently CoinDesk has been been like an arbitrator between the hackers who presented themselves as a white hat group originally in Binance. And
for like a month, they said, right?
Yeah, for like a month. So, so long story short, it seems that Binance users' information has been leaked, is on the dark web, and we're trying to figure out who is in the wrong here. Can't pinpoint if it's Binance, third party they're using for their KYC.
Binance is definitely at fault, and their third party, if that's the case, that there was a third party, because Binance gave it to the third party. You know, this is a this is exactly why KYC is fucking dangerous, because all your personal information that they're storing is like such a prime target for hackers. They don't store it well, it gets leaked. And then as it gets leaked and stolen, like, then it can get used for, like, identity theft to other KYC platforms. So, like, the criminals are using stolen, leaked data and purchased data. They could purchase KYC from people to do these accounts fraudulently anyway. And then honest users are getting screwed because now all their identifiable information is fucking out there.
Yeah, it's not a good situation. And it's, I mean, we've spoken about this ad nauseum on this show, but it's like, you almost get pissed at Binance because you come out of the gates like no KYC, no AML. You develop this economy of scale, which sort of forces you to put shackles on people. And then when you go to implement it, it's done in a shoddy way that leaves your users at risk. So it's pretty scummy all around. And it's like, I hate the shitcoin casino to like debate in my mind. Like, it always perturbs me. Like, every, like, CZ gets paraded around like some god and some respectable figure, but from a tech perspective and a data security perspective, it's a pretty piss poor job, especially after this leak.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely irresponsible for them to be using a third party to process this for them, and then to just like dismiss. So they released a blog post and they were like, well, it looks like that's from like what, February 2018. And or it's either February 2019 or February 2018.
I think it was one specific day or something.
And they were like, we had a third party doing it, so we definitely didn't lose it. And it's like, no, like, that's your fault if those are gone. And like, you have to remember too that Binance has been known to say that you don't need to do KYC, and then after you have funds on the platform, then force you to do it, to withdraw your funds. So, like, some of those users who got exposed here, they might have had no choice but to either send this or lose their money.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty fucked all around. So, yeah, look out for that. I believe they're also turning on their USA exchange soon. We'll see how much traction that gets.
I think so. They're asking Binance for 300 Bitcoin, right? Ransom.
Yes, that was it.
Otherwise, they're just going to keep leaking data.
I would pay it. They have it, don't they?
Yeah, but if you pay it, then you...
Yeah, set a bad precedent.
You reward them.
That's true. That is true.
You just not take the data in the first place.
What did you think about... this wasn't on the list, but what did you think about Coinbase's new additions?
Are they real? Are they official yet?
I'm pretty sure they were. I thought they were.
What, the new tokens?
Yeah.
No, I think they said they were like, we're thinking about adding these six.
It's eight.
We're thinking about adding these eight. But we might not add them all. It's like their new way of announcing them.
Yeah.
I think they add most of them when they do it. I don't know. They need a focus, man. Someone was looking at the daily volumes in some of these tokens on the ones they've already added.
Less than $10,000 a day.
Ridiculous. And they don't give them a Bitcoin pair, which is ridiculous to me. You can only trade them against USDC.
Why would anybody?
So weird.
Yeah.
And it's weird that they like pigeonhole the stablecoin in there when like they could just call it USD. It's on your platform. It's Coinbase. It's some kind of regulatory thing, maybe.
It's very confusing. I mean, we know Coinbase has no focus, and Brian Armstrong is trying to create the world's best payment system and doesn't understand that Bitcoin is going after re-architecting money.
Yeah, I mean, they're fucking clueless. The other thing with Coinbase is you see they're getting sued, I think.
For negligence.
Some Bitcoiners for Bitcoin Cash launch.
It's a good way to bookend the episode. We have the user-activated soft fork on the front end, that explanation, and then, yeah, so this ninja launch of Bitcoin Cash on Coinbase. So they launched it on like a random Tuesday.
Like 7 months after the fork or something. 6 months
December
after
December 22nd, I believe.
Yeah.
December 22nd, 2017.
And the fork was August 1st. So.
Yeah. This was like right after Bitcoin had hit an all-time high. And then, so they basically launched it out of nowhere on a random Tuesday, like announced it via tweet or something like that.
I think it was earlier than December 22nd because it went to like 50% of, I think Bitcoin was trading at like 9K and it went to like 4K or 4,500. So I think it was before we hit.
I actually recorded an episode on the day of it. Let me pull it up.
I think it was before we hit the all-time high of all-time highs, the 20K or whatever.
Wait, give me a second here.
Which I think was like around like December 15th or something like that. But anyway, that was some bullshit that they pulled. And
they're being sued for negligence.
A lot of people freaked out and were like, oh my God, I'm on the wrong side of the fork. Bitcoin Cash is going to take over. And they like traded in haste and lost a bunch of Bitcoin for it.
Then there was like rumors of insider trading going around.
Yeah, it just went straight down right after that.
Here, let me find this date.
And then the other thing is, you see what happened to 8chan?
Oh, yeah. This is actually...
Cloudflare kicked them off, which is... we've spoke about it before on the pod. They do the denial of service protection.
Yeah. No, and what's crazy interesting about this is... So, I guess 8chan... the founder of 8chan came out with a video and basically described the misunderstanding. Like, people said that... I believe it was the El Paso shooter...
I don't know which one, but it was one of the shooters.
Actually, it might have been the... It's fucking fucked up. They had to choose between mass shootings. One of the shooters left a manifesto, and the 8chan founders actually claiming that it was shared on Instagram first, and then somebody reposted it on 8chan.
But it was removed from Instagram, and it wasn't removed from 8chan.
Yes, and...
8chan's like an unmoderated forum on the internet.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's
the evolution. I think of 4chan.
It was like, yeah, it was like too heavy for 4chan's owner, and so they went and made 8chan. But yeah, so it's like the whole argument of internet censorship, and actually, we should probably talk about this too. Like Trump's press conference on Monday was actually scary as hell. The shit he wants to do, basically create. He's like the first steps to pre-crime and like executive orders on par with the Patriot Act. Or I don't even know if that was an executive order, but...
Patriot Act, I don't think was executive
order. No, it wasn't an executive order. But Trump is looking to take the Patriot Act and bulk it up a little bit, it seems, after these shootings.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he didn't... Yeah, on Monday he came out and he said he was, like, thinking about... he proposed the fucking death penalty for hate crimes, dude. Which is extremely slippery. So what the fuck is a hate crime? Are we really willing to bring back capital punishment for that?
Yeah, that could be... I mean, because you can interpret it, but you can make a bunch of things hate crimes if you wanted to.
Exactly.
That's interesting. I kind of tuned out, at least non-Bitcoin stuff, I tuned out this week.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, I mean, it's been a long week on that side of the world, and that and those conversations, like the gun debate and stuff like that, and people get yelled at for saying like these events are exploited to take away your rights, and I would argue I agree with that. And I really just hate the media around these whole things. I hate the way everything's exploited and it's pushed in your face, and I'm usually depressed for many reasons when shit like this happens, and most of it's a lot of it's the reaction from the mainstream media in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I like that I can just safely ignore it because I have Bitcoin, so it really does give me peace in times like these.
Sats are our safe haven.
They really are, more ways than one, like not just financially, right?
You can opt out. You can opt out of it, you know?
Gives me optimism. Gives me reason to hope.
Yeah. That's all we got for this week. We're almost exactly an hour. And do you have anything you want to end it on? Anything you want to touch on?
No, I just, you know, it's to another good week. I mean, let's see where we go from here, and it'd be pretty. It's something else seeing Bitcoin emerge as this. It's like almost like everyone's like, there's not that much argument about it being... we used to be called crazy for saying safe haven. I like went into hiding for a little bit. I've been saying and calling it a safe haven since like 2013. I was like during the bear, everyone's like, you know, it's a risk asset, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting.
Sats are our safe haven. They can be your safe haven too. We've got a YouTube channel now.
Oh yeah, let's chill that. We need to do more videos though. We did.
We are going to do more videos.
We will do more videos if you subscribe.
Subscribe, and we are You know why we're going to do more videos? Because we're going to set a target for ourselves and push ourselves to put out maybe one video a week, starting at a certain date.
Reasonable target.
I think so as well. Yeah, so go check out the YouTube. If you want to give a shout out and have us explain some shit to you, you can go to tftc.io/contribute.
We have
ask us questions there.
We have this event coming up, the cold card class.
The cold card class, if you're in New York City.
Tickets are out now.
Thursday, September 26th?
Yeah, I believe so. It's definitely September 26th. Mm-hmm. I believe it's a Thursday. $130 includes a cold card and the SD cards you need. Or you can just bring your own.
For $30.
Yeah, because it comes with pizza and beer.
Yeah.
And soda.
So we'll be doing that at Chain Code Labs here in New York City. We'll put the link in the show notes to that.
Yeah.
Space is limited, so I would hop on it as quickly as possible.
If you want to go.
If you want to go. If you want, I mean, and know that if you are going to go, like, you're going to be doing work.
It's going to be hands-on. You're, like, actually, we're just going to, like, do it together.
Yeah. So you're going to have to prep for it, too.
And our friend Evan Kaloudis is going to be doing it as well. Yeah. There's a bunch of us that are helping out.
Yeah, shout out to Evan. Don out there. We'll actually have him on the podcast soon as well in the future.
Fuck yes. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that's all we got for this week. Peace and love, freaks.
Cheers.